Welcome back to another episode. This week, we are diving deep into the news that just won't quit. From the AI front, Claude is either saving us by finding Firefox vulnerabilities or creating new problems with fake install guides. We'll unpack Anthropic's explosive growth and why everyone is watching their next move.
That's right. And speaking of surveillance, we're talking about a potential privacy disaster with the Meta Ray-Bans and how a new app is trying to warn you when those smart glasses are nearby. Plus, the FBI has had a major hack investigation on its hands. You absolutely do not want to miss that detail.
But we're not stopping at the headlines. March is here, and we're tackling the major issues in the workplace. Is Gen Z truly unprepared for corporate America? We're taking that debate head on.
And in honor of Women's History Month, our ongoing commitment to the conversation, we're discussing the serious challenges facing Black people in leadership and the disturbing trends of why women are disappearing from Europe's tech workforce.
Cyber attacks, privacy fails, big tech layoffs, and the corporate culture shift is all in this episode. So grab your headphones and let's get into the notes. Episode 202 starts now.
I think I want to talk about Gen Z in the workplace. There's been so many different TikTok videos and everything else about Gen Z to where I thought it'd be pretty fun to see where the differences are between us. I think they are what they call them, disruptors in a sense. I think they're disruptors. I think that's good, like most generations. Like they said stuff about millennials, Gen X, boomers. I think everybody's different, but I do think they are a little bit more radical. I mean, but we talking about Gen Z now, just wait till Gen Alpha get into the workforce.
That part.
That, I think that's what's gonna be crazy. But let me find some of these videos that I have for that.
Is getting fired from their jobs at alarming rates. And as someone who has hired and worked with a lot of people from Gen Z, there is a clear line between the people who do well and the people who don't. The easiest thing is probably to give real examples, but I do want to preface first that yes, every generation thinks the next generation below them is lazy and bad. And yes, there are a lot of companies getting away with not paying people well. I want to talk about two different Gen Z employees as an example. Both of them were paid well, but I have also noticed that the salary of the Gen Z employee has very little to do with how they perform. Both employees had a weekly meeting with their team. One consistently showed up with information about what was going on. The other usually had to be messaged 5 or 10 minutes into the meeting to make sure they were still coming. Then they would show up and say, sorry, I forgot it was on my calendar. I didn't realize this was mandatory. One employee.
I got to pause it right there because I think this is very nuanced because everybody don't have somebody that's worked in corporate before.
Facts.
So some people need more coaching than others.
Absolutely, especially when it comes to just some of the behaviors, the tone, being able to pick up on emotional intelligence is really important. And if you, it's something you like have to practice from a younger age, hopefully.
Well, that, and some people may have mentors. So they say, hey, when you come in, this is your 90-day plan. These will look like this is how you are going to get acclimated and get promoted. One person don't have that, so they don't understand. So they're still learning. I put it like this. And now as being a parent, I know with certain, one child I got to be very specific with, the other child be very broad with. Mm-hmm. This is when you have to learn things about the people that you hired versus expecting them to act like everyone else acts, so you can circumvent these different things and not always put the blame on them, because some people are just very different. And we're not even getting into if people have disabilities or other things like that. We're just literally talking about how you actually use your emotional intelligence to deal with your employees.
You notice an issue in their department, brought it up to their supervisor, had an idea of what to do, tried it. When the idea didn't work, they sat down together and thought about some other things to attempt. The other ran into a technical error that was preventing them from being able to complete something and didn't say anything until they were asked a couple of days later how the work was going.
Now that is going to be on you.
For sure.
You got to say something. All my people who've been in them project management meetings, if you got any impediments, that's when you need to say, hey, I got an impediment. I can't do my work because of this software issue. Call the help desk. That way, it's not fixed. At least you have documented the last 3 days is not fixed. And you told your boss, you told all these other people. So after you did all that, it's above you if it's something that's preventing you from doing the work and you can't do it any other way.
Yeah, waiting until they ask you is never a good practice. 10 out of 10.
And then they said, oh, I can't get it done because this wasn't working. Both of them needed access to a certain account, which was available for them to find in their onboarding documents they had. One logged in on day one and was ready to go with the account. One of them was asked about something that they would have been able to do on the account 3 weeks into the job and said, how do I get access to that account? Nothing the first employee did was going above and beyond their job. It was doing their job. Showing up to work is not the job. The job is completing the thing you're being paid to do. That often involves multiple tasks. That often involves having to figure something out. Being expected to do your job well is not having a lot asked of you at work. There are roles and salaries where you are paid to really just sit around and wait to be told what to do. But that is not the average job. That is not what most people are paying you for. And that is not something people are going to pay you even more for. And that is something people are failing to understand.
I'm not mad at him.
Yeah, and I'm not going to relegate just the I don't have access thing to Gen Z. I have a friend. I have a friend that when they were working at this company, they were on like a new account. And he was trying to get access to all these different things so he could finally get access to do his job. The other guy just sat around because he didn't have access, and he's not Gen Z. That led to that person getting let go. Because they was like, oh, well, I don't know what to do. And he tried to tell me so many words, bro, you have to let them know I don't have access to this. They're not paying us just to sit around and say we can't access nothing.
Yeah. You definitely have to try to help yourself to some extent. And I think that's having those open lines of communication, being assigned a mentor, having those frequent checkpoints with your leadership as you are a new employee. And then, you know, spacing it out as you get a little bit more acclimated with the company and your position and stuff. But those are things that should be discussed on your weekly or biweekly meeting. You know, did you get all your access? No, I'm actually having an issue accessing A, B, C, D, E, F, G, whatever it is.
Yeah, the funny thing is a good manager is always going to ask, okay, here's the, you know, access list, go through and request access for all these things. Keep me up on the progress of what you have access for. And then in the meantime, do X, Y, Z. And that's also is like, okay, what do I do while I'm not doing anything? And that's your time when you get access a little bit, you just get a chance to observe. The key word right here, observation. Mm-hmm. When you're new, you bring a different, I'll say a different set of eyes to an organization where you can see gaps and blind spots that they pretty much don't see because they're used to doing stuff a certain way. So now you start just writing all your different things. Like I did this before. I can literally show it to you. Like, oh, these are the things that I see right now. I would love to change. So now when you start presenting these things, now whether you get to fix them or not, you still look at like a good employee, and it's really not really going above and beyond. It's literally just trying to make sure that they made the right choice. Because a lot of companies are not playing anymore with hiring you. They'll spend all the money that they want to spend on the hiring process to find somebody they need, and they'll get you out of there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of young people are not realizing that at all. Let's see. I think we had some other cool Gen Z stuff. Let's see. Where is it? Here it is. So one of these was like the psychology of Gen Z or just kids growing up. So it focuses on the root of all the different things that people are not talking about. They literally just putting everybody in a box. Are you Gen Z? Yada, yada. Just going to be this and that. And I definitely liked a little bit of what I heard. I didn't hear the whole thing, but I thought it was pretty cool.
I have a lot of opinions about Gen Z in the workplace, but I don't have opinions. I have a master's degree in industrial organizational psychology. Gen Z is not the fucking problem. Livable wage is the fucking problem. Fucking having paid leave is the problem. Unrealistic schedules is the problem. There are so many problems that are not based in the individual. We have a systemic issue from the rooter to the motherfucking tutor, okay? Parents can't support their kids in their most critical stages of early development because they are forced into working multiple jobs. The parents who can, the affluent parents who have all the resources, their kids do fine. Then we get into the school and the teachers are being forced into standardized test rituals that do not actually support responsive, culturally competent curriculum. So what does that do? That further stunts the students' growth.
We got to pause right there because she said a lot. I've said many times that I don't like that school is really the same thing as when we went through school. It's kind of different. They're not using books no more. They're using Chromebooks, and it's really stupid. But relegating kids to learning in one way does not help them when it comes to the workforce. So I think we all got out of school by the time they started making everyone do like the common math, and you got to do the Punnett squares to get your, because they want everybody to do it the right way, and making, forcing teachers say, hey, make them do it this way. Not, hey, as long as you show your work, I don't care how you got the answer. That was a big thing for us. I think it's the reason why we are still good critical thinkers, because we were allowed to solve a problem multiple ways. Mm-hmm. These kids aren't. And I think in the beginning, she also brought up like, hey, livable wage. Some of these parents, they have kids that they can't even really look into because they got to work these dead-end jobs. And so they can't, yeah.
Conflict with pickup, drop-off.
So the kids are already behind, which I noticed to be true. Like, as a parent, I already know most parents don't have the luxury of really sitting back and saying, you know what, my kids should be doing, you know, X more of this at a certain age or not. Let me go take them to this specialist or look into this or that, see what's going on with their milestones. A lot of parents don't have that luxury because they got 2 and 3, 4 kids. They working 2 jobs. They coming home. By the time they come home or whatever,
it's time to reset the household and get the kids ready for tomorrow.
Bath, dinner.
Yeah.
Try to help with homework.
Don't have a commute, you know? You get off at 5. Don't have a commute. That's an hour.
Yeah.
You know, you got to get home. You got to be affectionate and how was your day and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And then you got to go into the routine stuff. It's not enough time in the day.
Yeah, and not leaving out the fact that a lot of them, if we even go back down, two things people say, well, you shouldn't have so many kids, which I agree. A lot of people don't plan for kids. But I don't think it should be to the point where you got to work yourself to the bone and take care of kids, because we know 15, 20 years ago, you could have a decent career and still be there for your kids and have vacations and do all this other stuff. So I don't even think, I think it's just to where corporate greed is the price of simple things. They building these homes real fast. They not even good homes. You got all these other things going on, and now you are trying to not pay people their worth. So now they got to double up. And we also know, we're not going to get into too much things, but we know the issues that she's speaking of is much worse in a single parent household than a two parent household. And so that's what another, you know, deviation that happens to some of these kids of why different things or certain things aren't being caught. Because at least if you got two parents, what one parent may not catch, this other person may see this. Or you talk about, when we were talking about, I think we're talking about this off the mic, talking about spouses and different, like, childhoods and different ways that they were brought up, how, you know, that can also possibly help out, where, like, you experience one thing through childhood with schooling and different things and activities and vice versa. So now you can spot out different things or say, oh, this child may need this or this child may need that. So I think it's a lot of different things. But so, like, she's on the money, but let's see what else she got to say.
Then they get into high school and they're already kind of fucked, if we're being honest. And the teachers and the parents can't do anything. It's too late now. They've already not formed the cognitive processes and develop and hit the developmental milestones necessary to be these people that you want them to be. And then on top of that, a lot of them are having more good sense. They're seeing what's happening to their parents. They're seeing what's happening to their teachers. They're seeing what's happening to their aunties, their uncles, and even their motherfucking friends. And they are realizing that all this shit is fucking fake and made up, and the only thing that's gonna make them believe in it again is actually having something to live for. Y'all not, this society is not giving people anything to fucking live for, and all of y'all getting on here thinking that you know the answer, you don't know shit. None of y'all know shit.
Now, I don't really know if her credentials are valid, because everybody say they do some on social media. There is an answer, but like I said, it starts much younger. Or if you, there are certain kids that are going to succeed no matter what. And it's not, and I'm pretty sure if I was like a high school counselor or something and I went and did the knowledge of the science behind how they are tracking, you know, what kids will be successful by like fifth grade to, I think they use standardized test scores to figure out who's going to be successful, who's going to end up in jail and all this other stuff. So all that stuff is there. Those standardized test scores, all that stuff is BS. It's not really teaching a lot. Like, some kids good at test taking, some not.
But school is really just for parents to be able to go to work. That's it. It's somewhere for the kids to go while the parents are at work. That's literally
I think that, but I think also it's also for a lot of indoctrination. There we go. Indoctrination to assimilate to the workforce when you get older. So when you think about, I worked retail. When I worked at Target, 8 hour, if you get a, you know, 8 hour shift, you get 2 15-minute breaks, you get a 30-minute, 45-minute lunch. This is going to be your job. This is what you do. No doing this, 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 and this. You must do this while you're at work. Like any other job, right? But certain jobs like that, it's literally similar to school. You don't really have a lot of flexibility. There's not a lot of stuff you can do to change your outcome or what you get paid and all this other stuff. So those jobs are like that. I think one of the things that we focus on now with the kids is, I think this is why in school's career day is so important for sometimes for kids to understand, you know, hey, oh, I can do that. Oh, like so-and-so dad is a lawyer or mom is a, what's the thing called when you, I know the name, but it's when you stick people, anesthesiologist. There you go. They're anesthesiologists. Oh, they are the mayor, the fire chief, whatever it is, right? All these different jobs. That's when you come in and now you kind of expose a kid. But the only flip side is that is that works only until they get home. If you've ever seen the story of Matilda, that's a fairy tale, but that's what a lot of kids going through, except 10 times worse.
Yeah, agreed.
So that's where it's at. And that's not just a Gen Z thing. There's a lot of kids that came through there like that. You have kids who all they want to do is probably grow up and be a manager at McDonald's. Or, oh, I'm going to just do what my family do. I'm going to just go and get on assistance. I'm going to get assistance. I'm going to get EBT. I'm going to get whatever all them other things to ask you about sometimes in our workforce surveys. And, you know, we're going to get the new J's and we're going to be fresh at school. That's a reality for a lot of people. And some people don't understand that when they talk about, you know, if they say like black people are doing like the victim Olympics or all these other things. And I'm like, yeah, but in some cases, a lot of people, they just, once your mind is already a certain way, it's just tough. You know, that's why Dr. Umar say, hey, I ain't gonna be able to psychologize all of y'all. Some of y'all got to go away for good. I might try to put that right there because that part is hilarious to me when he say that. And I think we had one more, because now that was going in, I think somebody was going into more detail about it.
A number of videos going around right now talking about this article from Fortune magazine published in January of last year, all the reasons why Gen Z is being fired at alarming rates. Now, I don't want to talk about why this checks out. What I do want to talk about is the number one reason that's been attributed to this, which is a lack of initiative. When I go into the comment sections of these videos, I see a lot of comments like this: initiative costs more money. Love how jobs want you to go above and beyond, but won't even pay a living wage to, or go above and beyond for you as a worker. Fair enough. What I do see in a lot of these comments is a lack of understanding of what is meant by initiative. So I wanted to offer you a very real and simple example of what initiative looks like so that you understand what's getting people fired and what's getting people promoted. The scenario is this. Your boss comes to you on Monday morning and says, hey, can you reach out to our contact at that company and get them to send you those documents that we need for our big meeting this time next week? You say 10-4. You send an email to that contact at that company. Several days go by. It's now Thursday. Your boss emails you and says, hey, just checking in on those documents. Were you able to get a hold of them? You pause for a minute, double check your inbox to make sure you haven't missed it. And then you email your boss back and you say, hey, I reached out as you asked, but I haven't heard back. Your boss sends you an email and says, hey, can you please follow up? It's really important that we get those documents. You say, no problem. You send a follow-up email. Friday rolls around. Your boss emails you and says, hey, checking on those documents, any word? You say, I sent a follow-up email like you requested, but I haven't heard back.
I'm going to stop right there because, like I said, this is a apples-to-apples scenario right here, kind of similar to what the first guy was talking about. In this instance, too, it's like, okay, if I have an employee that first time they technically they did what I said to do, I'm going to be more implicit this next time. Hey, please follow up. And this time, if they do not email you back, please call them. And also, if you need to, CC day manager. That's what I would tell them, because a lot of people don't know. That's how you get something done. When a team don't want to give you access to fix them, find a manager, CC them. That's how you do it.
Your boss emails you and says, have you tried calling, or can you please try calling and getting in touch with somebody? It's imperative that we get our hands on those documents and that we have them in hand for our meeting on Monday. Please let me know. Thanks. You call the company. You ask the receptionist for this person. They tell you that they're out of office. You say, okay, thank you, bye. You email your boss and you say, hey, I reached out and this person is out of office, so I'm not sure what we can do. Your boss says, leave it with me. Scenario two. Your boss reaches out to you on Monday, asks you to get in touch with the contact at the company to get the documents. You say 10-4. You send an email pretty much right away. 24 hours goes by. You do not hear back. You send a follow-up email to that person. But a half a day goes by. You still haven't heard back. You send an email to your boss that says, hey, I just wanted to give you a little status update on this. I've reached out to this person, haven't heard back. I've sent a follow-up email and I'm waiting for a response. If I don't hear back from them by the end of the day today, I'll be reaching out to the company to see if there's anyone else they can get me in touch with so that we can get those documents in time for the Monday meeting. I just wanted to give you a status update. Your boss says, much appreciated. Thank you. Wednesday rolls around, you haven't heard back, you pick up the phone and you say, hey, I'm trying to get in touch with this person, wondering if they're out of office. If so, is there anyone else who can help me in their absence? I'm trying to get a hold of these documents. You do some talking, you do some triangulating, you get your hands on those documents, you attach them to an email to your boss, end of day Wednesday, maybe morning Thursday, and you say, did some running around, got our hands on the documents, please let me know if there's anything else you need in advance of that meeting on Monday. Your boss says, you're my hero, thanks. Now, I also want to note that person two has done no overtime work and has not completed any tasks outside of their pre-assigned job. But I will highlight that they demonstrated an incredible amount of initiative to reach the outcome. So it's not just the task completed that's directly assigned to you, but it's understanding what the goal is, what are the outcomes you're going for, and what are the tasks that you can take the initiative to complete in order to achieve that outcome without somebody constantly following up on you.
I think that in customer service, we call this first call resolution. And I think it is important to try to see and take ownership as far and as much as you can. And common sense always isn't so common, but you do have to think critically. Even though for some people that's not, it's second nature. Like, yeah, of course I'm going to call. Of course I'm going to follow up. But everybody's brain doesn't work the same. So taking as much ownership and taking the situation as far as you can, and maybe even thinking about, take yourself outside of work and ask, what would you do if this was a personal issue, right? You needed to get these documents for yourself. What would you do? Would you just keep sitting around and waiting and you know that you need them by X date, or would you pick up the phone and start calling or reaching out to alternative people to try to help you reach, you know, whatever the goal is that you're trying to get to.
Exactly. I think a lot of these young people, like, they are confused about initiative or above and beyond and not realizing what it takes to do your job.
I hate the people who say, oh, is this in my work? Is this in my job description? I can't stand people who say that. Even if it wasn't, you still going to do it. You still going to do it. So what does it matter?
Yeah, no, on top of that, though, I think that's because a lot of this comes from that TikTok era. You had the corporate baddie, the DeAndre guy. He was being funny, right? Very facetious. I think his videos were cool. I watched some of them. But for the most part, they were just having fun. And he had just got in corporate. He ain't been in corporate that long. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Gen Z people hadn't been in corporate that long. So they got in where technically at that time, everybody was getting hired. You could have put some slacks and a shirt on a fish, they probably got hired. Now that's changed. And so now they are confused that they're actually having to do work. In a scenario like the last woman just said, a thing that you can remember with your Gen Z, X, Boomer, whatever, is a term called over-communicating. It's much better to over-communicate about what you're doing and pretty much don't have your boss ask you for status updates. You give them the status updates. Mm-hmm. So now they're going to start seeing you as a person that, like, hey, I don't have to micromanage this person. This person is going to always do what they have to do. And they're going to inform me if they have any impediments, if they run into anything. So you know what? They're free to roam. They're going to, I don't have to keep, I can give them a longer leash pretty much. If not, like person one, I just think there's a gap in them understanding. I don't think they really understand the magnitude of, like, hey, I need this done. Like whenever your direct manager reaches out to you about something important, that means they probably reporting to somebody that say it's important. And so you need to get it done. And if you tell them, hey, I'm not sure what else I can do, I'd much rather you say you don't understand like what else to do to reach out to somebody versus just I sent two emails and that's it. If somebody ain't answering the emails, something is going on. It's, you know, it's important. Wake somebody up. At the end of the day,
email somebody else, you know.
At the end of the day, it's about keeping your job. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. Like, that's the thing. Sometimes, like, if I bring it back to the blue team or security operations, some people scared to pick up the phone or call somebody or something. Like, look, bro, they paying you for a job. Don't be afraid to wake nobody up. Ask for forgiveness later. Even if you woke somebody up for the wrong thing, they may be like, oh, okay, this is what happened, whatever. But they're going to appreciate that you called, because you're like, you know what? You're just trying to look out for the company and do your job the right way. So I appreciate that. You know, next time, do this, do XYZ first and then call me. But I mean, that's kind of like how it goes when it comes to corporate. And so I just think, if I circle back to all the other times where we talked about college and everything else, is why there needs to possibly be a corporate etiquette class. Mm-hmm. Like, give us classes that matter. Hey, I'm going to be at work. I don't care if you're a teacher or you're a therapist or whatever. A lot of these people don't have any type of corporate etiquette. Like, I remember when it came to doing stuff for Natalie getting to school, like, that school was so horrible at emails. And I'm like, I know for a fact you are not getting more emails than I get. And I got like 6 or 7 emails and I respond on a daily. I know that's not what's going on here. It ain't that hard. And that's also the funny thing too, is like, with certain schools, then they can do your chat a certain way. And I realize, hey, I'm degreed. I've been corporate for a decade. So don't try to run this on me. I'm not one of the regular parents that run over here. I'm not one of the little parents.
I'm not one of your little friends.
Exactly. So I don't know. All this stuff happened. But I mean, I just think they need some time. I think if Gen Z has a millennial manager, I think they'll eventually be okay. If it has a Gen X or Boomer, it's going to be much different.
It's going to be, it's not going to go that, it's going to be a lot of friction. It's going to be a lot of friction.
It's like, you know, my baby sister is almost 18. My dad is, what, 61 or 62? It's different. My dad remember integration. My sister know nothing about that. And so the way that, you know, they even attack it, maybe raising her for certain things or doing certain things, is much different on what they feel you should do versus kind of what the reality of understanding what type of child that you have now. I think that's what a lot of the managers are not doing in the workplace.
I think that some of this stuff should be taught in middle school and in high school. Even just, I think it's important to have etiquette classes, right? And I think it starts there and it builds out. My grandma had took me or put me in some etiquette classes growing up. And it just helps you understand appropriate behaviors. Some people are not just self-aware or socially aware of themselves, which maybe causes them to have issues, or maybe people experience them as being unpleasant to be around because they don't have that awareness.
No, I definitely agree. I agree. But I think that's a good little warm up to the episode. I think we might eventually get into the black leadership stuff, but I want you to get into, I think one of the coolest ones you had up there, I guess, was that, did you want to do the FBI hack or the Trump cyber strategy?
Let's start with the FBI one.
Okay.
Okay. So somebody hacked the FBI's wiretap system, and let's talk a little bit about it. So the FBI, the agency responsible for investigating cybercrime, protecting national security, and surveilling suspected criminals, just confirmed that hackers broke into one of its most sensitive internal networks, the one used to manage wiretaps and foreign intelligence surveillance warrants. CNN first reported this on March 5th, citing an anonymous source. The FBI confirmed the next day with a statement that said, and I quote, they identified and addressed suspicious activities on their networks and leveraged all technical capabilities to respond. That's it. That's the whole statement. No scope, no attacker identified, no timeline. So let's talk about what was actually on this system, because it isn't just embarrassing, it is potentially catastrophic. So the compromised network is believed to be the Digital Collection System Network, the platform FBI investigators use to manage court-ordered wiretap authorizations and FISA warrants. These warrants are issued under Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and are used to surveil suspected foreign spies, terrorists, and serious national security threats. What's on this system? Active case data. So the identities of surveillance targets, the methods being used to collect intelligence, and potentially the identities of confidential informants. If an adversary had even brief access to this, they could alert surveillance targets that they're being watched. They could identify and cover assets. They could manipulate case records. The downstream damage from even a short dwell time here is enormous. The timing is also deeply uncomfortable. Salt Typhoon, the Chinese government-backed hacking group, already breached AT&T, Verizon, Lumen, and several other major U.S. telecom providers in 2024, specifically targeting their lawful intercept systems. These are the same kind of systems used for wiretapping. Whether this FBI breach is connected to Salt Typhoon is still under investigation, but the pattern is hard to ignore. Now, the detail that security experts are flagging loudly is that the FBI's top cyber talent has been hemorrhaging. Multiple senior officials have left, retired, or been pushed out recently, raising serious concerns about the institutional knowledge needed to defend these systems. Now, if we let this sink in, the agency, again, that is supposed to be investigating the hacks got hacked on the very system they used to spy on other people. If that doesn't underscore how serious the national cyber threat environment is right now, I don't know what does. So for that article, that's crazy. That's big.
Yeah, I mean,
at the end, when you said
that the people are leaving, so now it's like, it's one of the things where the people, we see this, the gripes all the time on the TikTok or wherever, how, you know, nobody's taking chances on these entry-level guys, and now these older people are aging out. So now there's a knowledge gap there that's not there, because believe it or not, guys, even something like the FBI, I'm guaranteeing that documentation ain't that good. Most of these places have bad documentation, or their GRC and everything is on Excel spreadsheets. Like, for real.
Yeah.
That's how something can happen to you. It's like, you know, nobody's policing the police. And what makes it even more dangerous is now people can go in, if it's true about what access to the data they have, now these criminal organizations can reach out like, hey, I know you got that thing. I give you, you know, $500,000. Erase them, take them off. So now they off the radar. So now if they ever get to court, we don't know any knowledge of that. So whatever they had, those records, all is gone.
How is it possible? I mean, we know it's possible.
Inside job, maybe?
We know it's possible. Anything is possible, but at that level, why is the security not in a better position? Why are there not more loopholes for you to fall through before you get to the data? You know, that's scary. That's really, really,
I think it's an inside job,
really,
possibly.
Really scary.
Nobody to come out and say it, but certain things, their system's supposed to be ironclad. Like, you're
supposed to be.
Somebody's supposed to show up at your house if you get inside the FBI network. Literally.
There's actually a movie that's kind of like that.
What?
It's about a lady who did something, but she didn't know what she was doing.
This is not similar, but it's kind of similar. There's a show on Peacock called The Copenhagen Test. I don't know if you've seen it or our viewers, have you seen it? The premise is that these guys they work for a foundation inside the U.S. government called The Orphanage, where they are, you know, looking out for terrorist threats and like other things of that nature, yada, yada, yada. And just a brief overview is like one of the agents actually gets hacked, like his body, he's hacked by, what's it called? It's cool tech, whatever that he's hacked. So now he's hacked and people can see what he sees. He didn't know it. He had to discover the hack and all this other stuff. So now people are seeing possibly privileged information, or they are spying on the U.S. government. But that kind of reminds me of that. But then if you follow that story, it's a lot going on with that situation. But however, it's a good show. But going back to this, I don't know. Maybe I should hire some more people. Did you see The Last Shaft? Mm-mm. So in The Last...
It's a movie? Show?
Yeah. In The Last Shaft, the son of Shaft actually did like forensics for the FBI.
Like Shaft?
Yeah. You know, Samuel Jackson?
Yeah.
And then I think, who was that?
So it's like a series spinoff or something?
No, it's just the third installment of the movies.
Oh, okay.
But I think Shaft actually, it was a show, but then they also made movies in late 90s, early 2000s. But yeah, his son does forensics for the FBI on there. So I just thought about that was pretty cool. So you should probably like, y'all should go check that out. I think I wanted to get into, I think what some of the stuff with Anthropic. And so the Anthropic Bug Bounty Masterclass, AI versus Firefox. In a historic partnership with Mozilla, Anthropic revealed on Friday, March 6, 2026, that their Claude Opus 4.6 model identified 20 vulnerabilities in a Firefox browser in just a two-week span. Claude found a use-after-free bug in the Firefox JavaScript engine after just 20 minutes of scanning nearly 6,000 C++ files. For context, these are logic bugs that traditional automated fuzzers usually miss and human researchers spend weeks hunting. Of the 22 bugs, 14 were high severity. Anthropic noted that this represents nearly 20% of all high severity patches Mozilla issued in the entire year 2025. This isn't just a tool. It's a workforce replacement for initial discovery. This is the most fascinating part for your audience. While Claude was elite at finding bugs, it was a terrible hacker. Anthropic spent $4,000 in API credit trying to get Claude to write a working exploit for these bugs. It succeeded only twice, and even then, the exploits were crude and only worked because Anthropic intentionally stripped away security features like sandboxing. The defender currently has the AI advantage. If you're a security researcher, you don't need to fear for your job, but you must learn to manage these AI agents. The future isn't you staring at code, it's you validating 112 unique reports an AI agent just handled you or just handed you. So I thought that was pretty cool, a way it can enhance it in.
I've 22 been,
yeah
14 high severity.
Yeah,
somebody's busy.
And then I've been hearing the things about you know, a lot of the pen test guys were talk about that, you know, some, like you just said, some of the stuff that AI is creating, the exploits aren't that good. And I think that's good because it shouldn't be able to create good exploits, because you just end up like the Mexican government.
That was a good one.
But while you said that, I actually had like a whole bunch of stuff about Claude, so we might just let them roll because they really were going in. So right after that, Claude's Pentagon pivot and the ethics boom. Anthropic is proving that ethics as a product is a massive commercial winner after CEO Darlo Amodi refused a Pentagon deal over concerns about mass surveillance. Claude's growth has skyrocketed recently, surpassing ChatGPT in daily U.S. downloads. On March 5th, 2026, the DoD formally designated Anthropic a supply chain risk because they wouldn't allow Claude to be used for autonomous weapons or surveillance. Instead of a PR disaster, this became a privacy-first rallying cry. On March 2nd, Claude hit 149,000 daily downloads in the U.S., beating ChatGPT's 124,000. Their daily active users hit 11.3 million, a staggering 183% increase since the start of the year. This is a masterclass in brand differentiation. Oh, I need to slow down. This is a masterclass in brand differentiation. I had my tongue going. When OpenAI and Google are chasing massive government defense contracts, Anthropic chose to be the constitutional AI. They are betting that the public sphere of AI surveillance is a bigger market than the military. In business, sometimes the best feature is what your product refuses to do.
I actually asked Claude, what's the tea between you and OpenAI and y'all getting more users? Like, this was the tone and context in which I asked.
What did it say?
And it actually had me cracking up. Should I pull up what it said?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on real quick.
Yeah, fam.
Okay, let me see. So I'm going to tell you what I said. I said, what's the tea with the government and y'all and them choosing OpenAI over y'all over some causes y'all refuse to drop? That's what I said. And it said, okay, here's the full tea. This just went down literally last week and it's messy. The background: back in July 2025, Anthropic signed a $200 million Pentagon contract that included two explicit restrictions. Claude could not be used for mass domestic surveillance of American citizens and cannot be used to power fully autonomous weapon systems. Everyone agreed to those terms and things were fine for months. In January 2026, Defense Secretary Hegseth issued an AI strategy memo requiring any lawful use language in all DoD AI contracts, basically demanding Anthropic drop those two restrictions. Anthropic said no. The company argued it had tried in good faith over months of negotiations, making clear it supported all lawful uses of AI for national security, aside from those two narrow exceptions. On autonomous weapons specifically, Anthropic said today's frontier AI models simply aren't reliable enough to be trusted for that, and using them that way would endanger American troops and civilians. The Pentagon gave Anthropic a 501 deadline on February 27th to drop the restrictions. When Anthropic didn't budge, Trump posted on Truth Social directing every federal agency to immediately cease using Anthropic's technology. Hegseth then designated Anthropic a supply chain risk to national security, meaning no contractor, supplier, or partner that does business with the military may conduct any commercial activity with Anthropic whatsoever. Hours later, OpenAI announced its own Pentagon contract, seemingly taking Anthropic's place. Many outside observers immediately questioned how OpenAI's stated red lines on autonomous weapons and surveillance were actually any different from what Anthropic had. Blah, 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 blah. Bottom line is Anthropic took a major financial hit to hold a safety line. OpenAI took the contract under terms that critics say aren't actually mutually stronger. But yeah, the numbers, the App Store glow up. Claude was sitting at number 131 on the App Store on January 30th, hovered in top 20 through February, then jumped all the way to number one on Saturday, February 28th, knocking ChatGPT out the top spot.
Yeah.
The fact that you can ask AI that and it can give you that story and you not have to go read 17 articles to put it all together, right?
Yeah, and you can tell that, I mean, it's going to give you the sources it pulled it from. So exactly. It's factual. So, no, that's definitely cool. And since we got that, we have one more not funny thing, but the install fix from Claude of what's happening with that. And let's see. Hackers are exploiting the Claude surge by targeting developers and vibe coders with the new social engineering campaign called Install Fix. I really feel like it's just a delineation of click fix if I'm just surmising what I believe based on the name. Attackers are using Google Ads to push fake Claude code, Anthropic CLI tool, installation pages. These sites are virtually identical to Claude.ai, even including the correct documentation sidebars. The site asks you to copy and paste. See, it's always the copy and paste. So, y'all, we've covered click fix before, so this is very similar. The site asks you to copy and paste a standard install command into your terminal. This command actually runs an info stealer called Amatura Stealer, the successor to ACR Stealer. It uses mshta.exe. It's a legitimate Windows tool to execute malicious code in memory, making it nearly invisible to basic antivirus. Keywords basic. But I honestly think stuff like Malwarebytes and some of the other tools will actually hopefully block it, but they may catch it afterwards. They may not do it right when it happens. But also in a blue team environment, there's plenty of alerts where you see MSHTA being used legitimately, and then you have to just research, okay, well, how can somebody like exploit it and what should I look for? That's what you should do so you're not doing all these false positives. But once you enter, the script drains your browser cookies, save passwords, and most critically, your AWS and GitHub session tokens. We talk about vibe coding, using AI to build apps without deep tech knowledge. If you're a vibe coder, you are the number one target because you're more likely to copy and paste commands without reading the URL. Stop and look. If the URL in the command isn't Claude.ai, don't run it. And I actually want to see how this actually looks. Let me go find this real quick. Let me see. Let's share it because I know a lot of times people are like, man, y'all need to share what's on the screen sometimes. So let's share screen.
I'm going to say what vibe coding is while you're doing that.
That's fine.
So vibe coding is basically a style of programming where you are describing what you want in plain language, and then AI will write the code for you. So it looks like it was coined by OpenAI earlier in 2005. But the idea is that you fully give into the vibes and you accept the output. and only intervene when something breaks, as opposed to actually reading and understanding every line of code that is being produced.
Yep. So let me see if it'll let me click on this and zoom. So this is what is what the people are looking at. They believe it actually be is legitimate when it comes to the install fix. But let me squint and see what I see of this picture. Oh, so I think the top one is the real one, right? And the bottom one is the fake, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, because this one says cloud code pages.dev.
You see how they look almost identical, the pages themselves?
But if you ever, the thing is, if you ever see an ad for something, you can always trust but verify. Go to the direct page and see if they got the same URLs. So this is how they're doing it right here. So this will tell you right here. This says developer
squarespace.com. Because it says Squarespace, so I wouldn't be thinking about that.
But these are everybody online is saying learn AI, learn that vibe code. But these people lack basic security fundamentals. Mm-hmm. And so they don't understand that everything with AI is not all good. So let's see if they got any more pictures of what it's looking like. So yeah, so this stuff right here, let's actually look at what it's telling them to install. So you could always, if it's telling you to go to these websites, you could put these in a sandbox and actually go view them and see if they are the same site that stuff is coming from Claude. You can use something called BrowserLing. So that's like the word browser, and then you add ling.com. You get like 3 free uses a day on that. So you can try something like that out. Joe's Sandbox. You can use VirusTotal, urlscan.io, and there's a couple other ones you can use. You used to could use SquareX, but I think that's shifted to be more enterprise use versus like users just being able to use it free. That's why I use for my virtual sandbox. It's pretty much a disposable browser. It was perfect. Oh, look, we get a video. Can you see this on your end? Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect. So, guys, we're looking at the actual install fix right now. That's it.
Yeah, like, I guess it was just showing somebody going there and copying it.
Yeah, I wanted to see it actually exploited. But that's pretty much what it looks like. So you got to remain vigilant when it comes to these things right here. Because if you don't, you'll end up with your computer messed up. And your AWS and GitHub session tokens taken. And if that happens, even if you got MFA, you screwed because they get your session tokens and they could be in your session. So please don't do that. I mean, you can call them. The AWS and GitHub can eventually get them out on the back end, but you'll be screwed for a while for whatever damage that they do while they're in there. So choice is yours.
So it's been a while since we've talked about health data. Let's take it back. 3.4 million people. Health data was stolen and nobody noticed for a year. So a hacker breaks into a healthcare tech company in November 2024. They start pulling data, names, social security numbers, dates of birth, home addresses, health insurance numbers, medical IDs, and nobody notices for almost a full year. This is the TriZetto story. And if you've ever visited a doctor who checks your insurance before treating you, there's a real chance your data was in there. TriZetto is owned by Cognizant, a tech conglomerate, and they provide revenue cycle management and insurance eligibility verification for healthcare providers across the U.S. Over 875,000 providers use them. They're basically every time a doctor office runs your insurance before an appointment, they are somewhere in that pipeline. So hackers first gained access in November 2024 through their external web portal. They stay completely undetected, reading, copying, exfiltrating for nearly 11 months. Trizetto didn't catch suspicious activity until October 2nd, 2025. Even then, they didn't notify affected providers until December 9th. And patients didn't start receiving letters until February 2026. That's 15 months from breach notification for some people. The final count confirmed with State Attorney General, 3,433,965,000 people, one of the largest healthcare data breaches confirmed this year. And it's not just your name and birthday, it's insurance member numbers, Medicare beneficiary IDs, provider details, demographic health data, the kind of info that cannot be changed. No ransomware group has claimed responsibility yet. No financial data like credit cards was exposed, but that's almost beside the point. Health data, obviously, we know to be more valuable on dark web markets than credit card numbers because it does enable medical identity theft, which is when someone is using your insurance to get treatments or prescriptions or surgeries billed under your name. That sounds like a nightmare. TriZetto has partnered with Crawl for credit monitoring and is sending, of course, free 12-month identity protection to affected individuals. If you get a letter, sign up immediately. 11 months of unauthorized access. 11 months. That is more than a security gap. Healthcare tech companies are sitting at the center of some of our most sensitive data, and monitoring capabilities clearly didn't match the responsibility in this particular case. If you can think about when we talked about Change Healthcare last year, so yikes.
Yeah, and hold on, before we even give a deep dive real quick, let's go ahead and hit on with this real quick.
Today's video is sponsored by Aura. Aura monitors your personal data, including your social security number, across billions of data points like the dark web and public court records to detect and alert you to potential identity theft. They give you up to $5 million in identity theft insurance should the worst case scenario happen. They also provide a bunch of other features to keep you safe online, all inside one app. You can go to my link right now, aura.com/textualchatter, to try 14 days for free. That'll be enough time for Aura to find out if any of your personal data is exposed. I highly recommend you do this right now because not only is the national public data not going to do anything to help you, they probably aren't even going to face any repercussions for this leak. I'm not leaving myself and my family vulnerable to data breaches. If you don't want either, you can go to aura.com/textualchatter to try 2 weeks for free. Now back to the video.
But yeah, that's crazy. 15 months.
No, 11.
11.
But still, bye.
My thing is, I always go back to, okay, what detections did y'all miss? Or did y'all even have detections in place? Remember you was talking about do these companies have SIMs in there?
Yeah, the other day.
A lot of these people got people at the company that don't know what they're doing. They just been at the company so long that they said, oh, you going to work in this department. Like I said, remember we said tabletops and all that kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. I bet they ain't do no tabletop. They're going to start doing them now. And it reminds me because it's a company right now recruiting a lot. They're recruiting for another role because a couple of years ago, they had a big breach. So now they've been very diligent on getting the right security talent for their org because they don't want that to happen no more. That's typically what you see happen in these situations. So TriZetto is probably going to be hiring. Matter of fact, you should type in TriZetto now and see if they need some help. Reach out to the CEO or the CISO. I'm like, hey, look, I see y'all had this breach, dog. I got you. Fam, like, tell them
I'm screaming. Tell them that happened. Hey, fam.
Yeah, tell them that you had that happen. But no, that's just crazy. I've never even heard of Crawl. That's why I just put the Aura ad right there. Cause I'm like, I know they're gonna alert you because when AT&T had their breach, they told me before AT&T told me.
Same. Change Healthcare told me. I mean, Change Healthcare. AT&T told me so far out.
Right.
It almost didn't even matter.
Tell me about it. But let's see. Because we had... Actually, I thought what was pretty cool briefly was to talk about Apple's Chromebook killer.
I heard about it. Let's try it.
Pretty much called the MacBook Neo. Apple just dropped the MacBook Neo, their most affordable laptop ever, starting at $599 and $499 for the education market. It's a direct shot at the soft middle of the PC ecosystem dominated by Chromebook. This is the first time Apple has put an iPhone-class chip in the Mac, the A18 Pro. It's a fanless, solid, and offers 16 hours of battery life. It comes in four colors, blush, indigo, citrus, and silver. To hit that price point, Apple cut the specs it has. It has 8 gigs of RAM, none upgradable, of course, a 13-inch liquid retina display that lacks True Tone, and two USB-C ports, one of which only USB 2.0 speed. That sucks. You need at least USB 3.0 now. The strategy. Apple is resetting the floor. They are betting that a $599 Mac, even with 8 gigs of RAM, will perform better for AI and web tasks than a $600 Intel Core Ultra 5 PC. For the parents and the career changers, this is the gateway Mac if you've been waiting for a cheap way to get your kids in the ecosystem on a budget machine to start learning to code. This is the one that officially kills the value proposition of a mid-tier iPad. But you know what? Now I think about it, they got a point. I wonder why launch this and then also possibly kill your iPad Pros, because that's what I think is going to be directly competing with that.
I mean, I can see it.
Let me see. I know people probably want to see pictures of it. It's actually looking nice, though.
I'm not mad at it. I think that it's about time that Apple has an affordable price point for folks. I mean, people love their Apple devices. I don't know if, depending on your major, it might not be the best device. Yeah. If you're like in the engineering field or...
if you're in the engineering field, you might as well get a steel MacBook Pro.
Yeah, just because you need to have... How much RAM? 8?
I think this one got... that one got 8. This got more than 16, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, it's also a chip. They have a chip that they put in an iPad or an iPhone in it, too. So, I still think it'd be better than a Chromebook, though.
And parents, don't let your kids convince you that they just have to have it either. It'll be nice to see some reviews start coming out about people's experiences, yeah, because most of these people already have MacBooks, you know.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool, like an entry level Mac for people. There's some people.
I probably would have got one.
Yeah,
I ain't gonna lie.
There's some people that literally all they do is just get on the internet and they don't really do anything.
It's cheaper than an iPad.
Yeah. Because I try to get Giselle all the time. Hey, you just want an iPad? No, I want another MacBook. Because her screen on her MacBook Air is messed up. So, but it's a Mac Mac repair spot, literally on the first floor. I just have never scanned their QR code to see.
Get some details.
Mm-hmm. But
Margo?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So there's an app for that, and this time it's for spotting people who are recording you. So, quick change of pace. This story is wild from a different direction. So you've heard of Meta's Ray-Ban smart glasses, right? You know, I wear mines. The ones that look like totally normal sunglasses but have a camera built in and can record video, take photos, and interact with AI all without the person in front of you knowing. Yeah, those. I don't really like that because the people should know that you're recording because there's a flash on it. I'm not really feeling the context in all of the conversations there. I do get the hee-hee-ha-ha jokes, but as long as nobody has altered with the software, the light will be on if somebody is recording and or taking a picture of you, if you're not aware, because people are giving a lot of thoughts and opinions and they don't know anything about how it works. So if someone, which most people have not, jailbroke their glasses, you'll be able to know if somebody's recording you. Back to the story. A Swiss developer named Jean Renaud got fed up after reading reports about people using those glasses to secretly film people in massage parlors during immigration raids and even in courtrooms. Mark Zuckerberg's own team was scolded by a judge for wearing Ray-Bans in court. He decided to fight back with code. He built Nearby Glasses. It's a free Android app, open source, zero data collection, and it does one thing. It constantly scans for Bluetooth signals from smart glasses. When it detects a device from Meta, Luxottica, which makes the Ray-Ban frames, or Snap, it sends you a push notification. Smart glasses are probably nearby. The clever part, every Bluetooth device is required to broadcast a manufacturer's identifier. A company ID is part of how Bluetooth work. It's mandatory. You can't hide it without breaking Bluetooth compliance. So he basically mapped the IDs for Meta, Luxottica, and Snap, and the app listens for them within about 30 to 50 feet in open space. It's not perfect. MetaQuest VR headsets share the same company ID, so you can trigger false positives. But the logic is fair. If you can't see someone walking around in an Oculus headset and you get an alert, it's probably glasses. Why does this matter? Because Meta is reportedly working on adding facial recognition to these glasses through a feature called NameTag. Two Harvard students already demonstrated last year that you can pair Ray-Bans with publicly available facial recognition tools and identify strangers in real time, pulling up names, addresses, and phone numbers just by looking at someone. Meta hasn't launched this yet, but the capability exists, and Snap and OpenAI both have smart glasses products in the pipeline too. One developer, no funding, no team, built a countermeasure to an entire product category backed by billion-dollar companies. I respect it. I'm not mad at it at all. I'm not mad at it at all. It's only Android-based as of now, but Meta's response was, our glasses have an LED light when recording. What they didn't mention is that YouTube has tutorials on how to disable that LED. We are in surveillance arms. We are in a surveillance arms race happening at the consumer level, and most people don't even know it. Yeah, I still like my glasses. I will not be discouraged from liking them, but I do understand some of the discomfort and uncomfortability that people feel. Like, I saw something online of like a lady getting a wax, and she said that her waxer had on Ray-Bans, which they are prescription glasses, so people are going to wear them doing, you know, their normal day-to-day functions. However, in that circumstance, you being whoever it is that's servicing someone, you do have to be mindful of things like that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
I personally wouldn't want someone giving me a wax who has those glasses on.
Right, because
because you don't know, and I'm in tech, so do you know
when Meta really isn't recording?
Exactly.
And that's the thing, and I actually wanted to touch on briefly that. Because I sent you that article. Lee actually wanted to send it to me. And pretty much it says...
The one you sent me.
The Meta Ray-Ban privacy disaster. A joint investigation by Swedish and Kenyan journalists has revealed that human contractors in Nairobi, Kenya, are manually reviewing intimate and disturbing footage captured by Meta smart glasses. Meta uses a subcontractor called Sama to label data. Workers reported viewing footage of people in bathrooms, intimate sexual moments, and people entering pins at ATMs.
Wait. Sorry. Is this the people's data that's stored in? Okay. After they've taken whatever.
I don't think the people even knew.
Like basically like someone's private drive cloud Dropbox situation.
The way that the article was made, I don't think it's stuff that they were actually wanting to be recorded.
The people.
Yeah.
The owners of the glasses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Meta claims that they use AI to automatically blur faces and sensitive info before humans see it. However, a contractor stated that the blurring fails constantly, especially in low light conditions, leaving identities fully visible. Investigation tests show that Meta's own retail staff were telling customer data stays on the phone. This is false. If you use AI features like Look and Tell, that video streamed to Meta servers and potentially reviewed by a stranger 8,000 miles away. The recording, so is it really AI? The recording light on the glasses is easily covered by a tiny piece of black tape. In 2026, you have to treat a pair of glasses in a boardroom as a live unencrypted surveillance camera. So people are being low down. They acting like they not glasses by covering the indicator showing you it's recording.
But I thought that it would not, if it senses, if you have not altered the software and you cover it, I thought that it will not record.
They probably are altering it, but I just want to add insult to injury, because that is crazy though. Like,
but I mean, I can understand, because it was something about somebody in court who had them on his. I get it. I absolutely get it. Now, the people who are in these type of professions, you need to be mindful. You need to have a second pair of glasses that are not smart.
Yeah.
Because if those are prescription and you can't see, and you're required to remove them, you know what I mean? That's a disaster.
Right. And actually, while we are here, let's do the one you sent me about the masters in 36 days.
Okay. You want me to go?
I got it. Oh. You sent that to me.
Okay. Oh, it's the TikTok.
Yeah.
36 days.
I think this video is about me, so let's talk.
One, how is that even possible?
I have the answer. Okay, so I enrolled in Capella's Flex program, which means that it's a self-paced program. They give you the classes. You complete them at your own pace. All I did was lock in. I locked out distractions. I didn't read any books where I typically read a lot. I didn't talk on the phone much. I wasn't on social media much. I locked in for 36 days straight. I wrote about 10 pages worth of essays per day. I did not transfer any credits in. This is from start to finish. It took me 36 days. I did not utilize AI. I don't believe in AI. Also, AI is very inaccurate, so I wanted my assignments to be correct the first time that I did them. Oh, and fun fact, I did this degree in secrecy. Nobody knew except for my best friend because I gave it to my parents as a surprise, like, hey, I got a degree. And I also bought them a 7,500 square foot home that we're currently in.
Two, they were also selling like a course and basically a bunch of material to help you cheat and study. It was cheating.
I can teach you a thing or two about research because that's actually not what I do. What I do is complete assignments for college students. That's their tests, quizzes, PowerPoints, essays, entire online courses, whatever they need to get to graduation. Pop quiz.
Ain't that cheating though? That's definitely cheating.
I thought she was, wait, let me see where she's going with it because it sounds like cheating.
Hold on, you know what I need? I need to add, what do you mean by that? I need to put that right there. Hang on. But
who's been doing this for years? White people. Okay, you got that one right. You don't know what I'm talking about. Does Aunt Becky from Full House ring a bell? Where her and about 50 other millionaires were paying for their white, undeserving children to get accepted into the best colleges, taking spots from black and brown students? No? Okay, hold on. I got a couple more to mention. What about the Harvard's admission bias lawsuit where they found that black applicants were being admitted into Harvard at significantly lower rates than their white counterparts, despite their applications being quite similar?
I'm trying to see how she is conflating the two. What that got to do with you actually doing work for people?
I'm just trying to figure out if she's finna get there because it do sound like cheating.
What about when these allegations also happened at Yale in the early 2020s? Or maybe we should talk about the grandfather clause still existing in colleges in the 2000s, meaning that if your mom, dad, or grandparents or anyone in your family went to that college, your chances of getting admitted into that school were 3 to 5 times higher than someone who did not have a relative go there. Keep in mind, black people were not admitted until recently. Before we move on, I just want to clarify. When white people cheat, it's a scandal. We pay a fine. We do like 60 days in jail. We move on. When black people do the same thing, shut the system down. We got to do something different. The whole system wants to change to keep us out again. Right? I'm just trying to make sure I'm keeping up.
And also, the job market is so awful for people with like these professional degrees.
I see here that you're a medical tech, so I just wanted to ask, have you had experience with your master's level degree trying to get a job, or are you just a tech or associates? I'm just trying to figure out where you fall in the category. Like, is this from personal experience or just what you see online? Also, if the...
I will interject there. I'm with her on that part because all you see is, like, you see me post all the time. Every time we have somebody get a job, I'm like, look, you hearing all this, but they still hiring out here. You're just invisible to the recruiters because they can't find you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, is it bad? Yes. Is there some BS going on? Are black people being interviewed just so the company said they interview black people? Absolutely. But you can still find a job.
The job market is bad for people with professional degrees. Then wouldn't it be worse for people who do not have them? Therefore, I should probably pat myself on the back for going to get my degree so that if I ever do have to enter the job market again, I'm better prepared? Or no?
That it's just a slap in the face that someone just earned it in 36 days.
I just feel like a slap is not enough. I can spit in it too if that makes it easier to digest.
Is I feel like the professional degree beyond a bachelor's has become meaningless.
Again, based on my research, you don't have one. So you would not understand the value of a master's degree until you get one.
And I don't want to discredit anyone's hard work because I could never go back to school for any more amount of time.
So admittedly, you're mad at me for something that you could never do. You couldn't do it in 36 days, 36 weeks, 36 months, or 36 years. But you're mad at how long it took me to do it.
But I would be absolutely devastated if something that took me multiple years could just be handed over to someone in 30 something days.
The concept of something being handed to me is crazy. My ancestors were slaves.
All right, now. I'm like, you, this is the, hey, this that stuff dudes be talking about on the internet. You ain't really answered much. All you just did was shift the blame every time. Well, they can do it, why I can't do it? That's literally what she's did the whole time, which I get that sentiment, but you are really not making yourself look better here. I don't even know what you got a degree in. Did they ever say what she got a master's degree in?
I don't think so at the beginning.
I don't even know what her name is. I wonder if you could research that while we wait.
Sharecroppers ran on foot from Tennessee to Indiana and were denied an education with a plethora of other things that we can get into later. On the other hand, your people were the slaveholders, were the property owners, made the laws and policies, built the schools, had centuries worth of advantages. So I'm just trying to figure out why you're not farther in life than you are. Like me compared to you, I'm winning. And statistically, I shouldn't be. On my dad's side of the family, I'm first generation master degree. On my mom's, I'm only second generation. No matter how I do it, I promise you, I'm going to play catch up for my son, my grandchildren, and anybody else that falls in my lineage in the future. If this consists of me racking up degrees in 36 days, I'm going to do it. If it consists of me buying homes, currently in my fourth one, I'm going to do it.
See, I need to, this is the type of stuff you got to go research, people, because
I can't, no public details.
What about when he, on her page, what does it say about her?
Just the homework girl. That's her brand.
She got an Instagram. Instagram only tell you more about people than that. Because I'm like, okay.
The reason why I wanted to talk or like talk about this article was because I feel like, will we see more we already can clearly see what type of respect these type of programs get. But I honestly feel like in some way, shape, or form, that might be what the future of education looks like. Self-paced education. Not everywhere. You're still gonna have the fine, not the fine. You're still gonna have the high-end institutions, right? That'll still be more traditional. But I think that self-paced courses and programs and certifications and things like that will become more prevalent. But the thing is, will they matter if this is gonna be the way that they're seen? You get what I'm saying?
Yes. No. So I remember this, something I wanted to talk about a while back. I had bookmarked some on Threads like in January. And I guess this woman is a recruiter. She said, tech companies take pedigree seriously. No boot camps. Must have a computer science degree from a top 20 school, maybe top 50. Work for top tier companies. Yes, the short tenure and gaps will impact you. They want strong, passive candidates that are already employed by the competition and not even looking for a new role. Don't let the I can teach you breaking the tech folks fool you. As a tech recruiter, I'm fighting for my candidates and my life. This is a top tier candidate in my book. They said whoever did feedback on him, they said does not meet, and it's a white it out right here, talent bar in education or company types, plus happy. Oh, hoppy. That means job hopping. Mm-hmm. But I brought that up because this circles back into kind of, we tell people some of these things is checklisted, but if you want to do certain things in your career, you got to follow what certain people are doing with their degree path. So if there's some certain thing you want to do at certain companies, then you might have to go to a Yale or Harvard or Stanford or MIT or wherever you want to go. Think about it. People think all degrees are measured on the same scale.
They're not.
Like even where we got our master's at, like in our area, I think it's recognized as like a top program. I think even in the country, I think their cyber program is recognized. Now, I didn't do the cyber program. However, if you still have to go match it up with, I guess, maybe Georgia Tech's or some of the other people's that's just more acclaimed, you may fall short there. And a lot of people are, some of them are being strategic because they just want to get the checkbox. But then some people aren't thinking past that. And so we don't know what, like I said, I still don't know what degree she got. And why are you telling, like, I get that you're doing homework for them, but if the people find out that they're not doing it, and they could get in trouble.
Yeah, academically dismissed.
If this consists of me traveling the world and getting more knowledge so I can pass it on to my descendants, I'm going to do it. How I play catch up to you should not matter. Again, your people were the slaveholders. My people were the slaves. They could not get an education, so I'm doing it today.
And I think it goes to show that our education system is really based off of greed and money.
So the same thing Black people have been saying for decades. Everything's about race. Yes. Yes, it is. I typed out a couple stats for you, so I'm going to look over here real quick and read them off to you. Princeton found that Black applicants were 23% less likely to be admitted to selective colleges than their white applicants with similar academic credentials.
Why she keep on bringing up Ivy Leagues? I ain't gonna lie, and they gonna kill me for this, but based off of these snippets, it be reminding me of that Jasmine Crockett stuff. Where, how in the way they bringing up things that's not really going to the point. You are bringing up stuff. You're talking about the elite of the elite. Granted, there are white people that pay for that, but only the elite of the elite get into the Ivy Leagues. You went to Capella, a school anybody can go to and pay for it. Stick to that. She's trying to make her argument so bad that it's not working. And they're playing the Black card right here. This didn't even call for none of the things that she brought up. This wasn't one of them type of things. Why you just didn't refute to what he was saying and answer the points versus trying to get people on your side and to create divisiveness based on what you're saying to see if you can win the argument? To me, you didn't win anything. You did not. Like, I want to finish it, but it's like, it's just BS already.
Yeah.
But I'm going to let it play because I got to get my charger.
The American Educational Research Association reports that SAT and ACT scores are strongly correlated with race and family income, not just academic ability, and their use in admissions systematically disadvantages Black applicants, reducing their likelihood of admission relative to white peers. Georgetown University Center on Education in the Workforce found that Black students are significantly underrepresented at selective colleges, not because of lack of interest or application, but due to structural barriers and biased admissions pipelines that favor white affluent students. Affluent money.
Because basically, as long as you have the money to pay the tuition nowadays, you can get into whatever you want, and it doesn't really matter if you're learning the material or not.
So it's already harder for us to get in, harder for us to pay for it. Y'all got money, y'all get in more. But also, what happens when we get there? Just realize I've gone through this whole video with one earring on, but we'll talk about that later. Anywho, here's a study. A randomized experiment with teachers showed that when the only difference in a writing sample was a name thought to be associated with a Black student versus a white student, teachers rated the Black-labeled work lower on vague grading scales, even though the work was identical. This paper is written by Tremia. That's me. This paper is written by Reed. That's you. Identical. Reed is going to statistically get a higher score than me, just because he has a white name. The video is getting long. I hope you get the point by now. I just want to say that Black people were never invited to play the game, but now that we're here.
We don't get the point. I wish I could get some
of your time
back. Because they're stupid, bro. That's the pseudo smartness that she went up there and just said a whole bunch of BS that was amounting to nothing. Like, you did those things and now you have a master's. But that is another reason why people don't take them type of schools seriously.
And that goes back to the conversation of people. Some people are working so hard for these degrees, like giving it literally everything that they have just for them to get done and finished and graduate and it be looked at like that.
Because if all you're doing is, and like, if I just break it down, so you wrote 10 pages a day, what do you do all day that you're able to write 10 pages every day to graduate in 36 days? Because what if you multiply that, what is that, 3,600 pages? Like, I don't know. I don't know. Like, you didn't answer nothing. Like, I'm just mad. Like, don't ever try to pull the woe is me thing on stuff like that. If you would have said you got denied to these other places and Capella accepted you, I would totally understand. But that's not what you said. You just stated Black people, yah, 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 and all this other stuff. So I just felt like that was stupid and idiotic.
Trump dropped a cyber strategy and it is 7 pages long. So on Friday, the Trump administration released what it's calling President Trump's cyber strategy for America. And I want to be fair with this one because there are real things in here and there are some real questions too. First, the basics. It's a 7-page document. For context, the Biden administration's 2023 cybersecurity strategy was 39 pages. Trump's first term cyber strategy in 2018 was 40 pages. This one is 7, and roughly half of that is preamble. The administration said it was intentionally kept high level with more detailed guidance to follow. The strategy lays out 6 pillars: shaping adversary behavior through offense, promoting common sense regulation, modernizing federal networks, securing critical infrastructure, sustaining superior.
It's happening to you.
Say the word. Sustaining superiority.
Sustaining superiority.
Yeah, there we go. And emerging tech and building the cyber workforce. The headline item is the offense first posture. The strategy says the U.S. will not just defend the cyber domain, it will actively disrupt adversaries, dismantle hacker networks, sanction nations that harbor cyber criminals, and unveil and embarrass foreign espionage and propaganda campaigns. Trump's intro letter says anyone who would seek to harm America will pay the steepest and most terrible price. That's a message to China, Russia, and every other nation state actor running campaigns against U.S. infrastructure. The strategy also pushes AI-powered cybersecurity tools to defend federal networks, post-quantum cryptography for future-proofing, and zero-trust architecture across government systems. It pushes critical infrastructure protection and says it wants to prioritize U.S.-made over adversary-made products in the supply chain. Trump also signed an executive order the same day directing the DOJ to prosecute cyber-enabled fraud and the State Department to impose sanctions on nations that tolerate cybercrime. Now, for the but, and there are a few, the strategy acknowledges CISA, the country's top cyber defense agency, but CISA has lost over a third of its staff under this new administration. Its acting director was just reassigned. Multiple senior officials have left or been pushed out. The top Democrat on the House Homeland Security Committee called the strategy underachieving and said it's full of vague platitudes with no concrete blueprint. And this document dropped the same week the FBI's wiretap system got hacked. What I will say about this is that I think that our strategy does need to be a bit longer than 7 pages. And I think it needs to be a bit more directive and a bit more specific in the guidance that needs to be followed. So I guess the only thing for us to do is just to kind of wait to see what comes out of it, which we typically, that's what we're doing here these days. But I just thought it was interesting to give you a little bit of perspective on what is actually in the document.
Yeah. I think the biggest one that they're having issues with is CISA. Having an issue with CISA and pretty much their short staff, and they've been ever since the government cuts and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's like the real big one that people really should be fixating on.
Yeah.
So combine that, and then you got the FBI stuff. Everything's piss poor. Everything is piss poor.
For real, for real.
And it upsets me because it's like in a private, like it. There's no way possible that it should be harder to get jobs in the private sector than it is in the public. And then the public now is like a mess. They're behind. They know what they're doing. It's a mess, bro. Ransomware is front door remote access tools. A new 2026 report from CIO Dive and cybersecurity insurance firms confirmed that remote access tools, VPNs, and RDP are now the primary entry point for ransomware, accounting for 3 in 5 attacks. The credential walk-in. Hackers aren't breaking in with complex exploits anymore. They are buying stolen credentials and walking in the front door. And you know, that's something that we didn't really talk about a lot, where people are thinking about fortifying so much things. Like, hey, you need to be looking at the dark web and see if any of y'all employees' credentials are out there. VPN risk. Organizations using self-managed VPNs like older Cisco or Citrix setups were 11 times more likely to be hit by ransomware than those using modern zero trust cloud access. In 2025 and 2026, attackers shifted focus from RDP to targeting vulnerabilities in network devices like Avanti and Fortinet bugs we've seen. If you're an IT manager or sysadmin, your number one priority is killing the password. If your remote access doesn't require a hardware-based MFA like a YubiKey, you are effectively leaving your door front. I mean, you are effectively leaving your front door unlocked in a bad neighborhood. What do you mean by that? But yeah, I think that a lot of organizations are going to passwordless for sure.
Let's get there.
It's helping out.
Let's get there quickly.
But the thing is, once you go to passwordless, people start forgetting their passwords. So you got that going on as well, too. Third, let's see.
Wait, there's no password. You mean they can?
So typically, normal infrastructure now, for some people, if they don't use Microsoft for like their all the suites of things, you might have like AD here, Okta here, and then like whatever you want to be your passwordless identity solution, that'll be in there. So now you'll have to log on like normal, and then you have to log on to the passwordless system. But now, if they have everything set up correctly, then you really will only have to type in your password once while you're on your computer, and it'll connect also. It'll help you connect to your VPN. So it'll say, hey, do you have this passwordless system on your phone? Do you have it on your machine? It's just another way to verify you are who you say you are. So that's technically the one password that you had to remember, but it still makes it tough because you got that, and then you got like still got your password managers and all the different things. But it does make it a little bit easier for people not to, if they do get into your environment, that's another layer of conditional access. So if they don't have this, this, and this, they can't access nothing from externally. So they'll be out of luck. So where they have to rely on getting some RDP or something like that on the host or in a network in order to gain access.
So I think that people need to just be careful. And I think that companies, a lot of companies feel like, oh, we have all of these requirements that we have to abide by, and passwordless authentication isn't there yet in terms of whatever their audits and, you know, stuff is. And this is like real life.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much power. Just taking them passwords away from them users. Just take them away.
Yeah, especially they should. So, and then it's, the simple solution is, hey, if you don't have passwordless, then make all these passwords connect to your SSO. So now you got one password for everything. So now all them passwords expire once your password for your SSO expires. Mm-hmm. That makes it easier. A lot of times that you got all 5, 7, 10 different passwords. And now, granted, this is different. We're not talking about anything's privilege. If you got privileged accounts, they should have separate passwords. And of course, they got separate parameters on the privileged accounts. There's certain things that you shouldn't be able to do with a privileged account. But for the most part, that's how you should kind of have your environment for identity access management, at least like an easy part. Now, if we get into when you put something in the middle, centralized. There we go. I couldn't think, man.
I thought you was holding up Illuminati.
Nah, you gotta, when you centralize it,
what is that?
Centralizing, then you automate your identity access management policy. I think it gets a little bit different on what you want to do, automating those things and all the different stuff. But for the most part, I think that's still always going to be the biggest thing. So, takeaways is stolen credentials. If you know you got hacked or having your threat intel team scout the dark web or use the different services that say, hey, your credentials was found, please reset them. Also, don't make your password at work be similar to your personal password. So if your personal stuff was hit, somebody said, let me see where they work at. Let me see if this password works. They should be different passwords. You see people do that a lot, reusing the same passwords for both things. So doing that, better VPN solutions, upgrade your VPN. Do not use any out-of-date VPNs because it's going to cost you, because they're just old. You just got to update with the times. And security awareness, better detections, conditional access policies in case you do get popped. And you should be all right. Just make sure, like, the key term for this segment is robust. Robust network infrastructure. That's what you need right there to be safe.
Today is actually International Women's Day. So I have a cute article for all of the gals that are tuning in. Shout out to y'all. Women are leaving tech in Europe, and AI is about to make it worse. So, in light of today being International Swimming Day, I saved this story for last because it deserves to be heard and it deserves our attention. So a brand new report from McKinsey, analyzing 4 million LinkedIn profiles across the EU combined with OECD data and workforce analytics from AI hiring platform Findem, dropped this week with a message that should alarm every tech company and policymaker in Europe. Women are disappearing from tech, and it's getting worse. In 2025, women made up just 19% of core tech workers in Europe. That's already low, but it's also down 3 percentage points from the year before. In an industry where the talent gap is already projected to reach between 1.5 and 3.9 million people by 2027, losing ground on women in tech isn't just an equity issue, it's an economic crisis. Here's where the pipeline breaks. Girls actually slighter outperform boys in STEM subjects in primary and secondary school. They're doing the work, but only 32% of female students choose a tech-related bachelor's degree. And then from that group, only 19% end up in actual tech roles. The funnel is leaking at every stage. Career progression is even worse. Women's participation drops up to 18 percentage points before reaching management role. The result? Women hold just 13% of management positions in Europe tech companies. So you're fighting to get in, you're fighting to move up, and most of that is a losing fight. Now we have AI entering the picture, and this is the big moment. AI is eliminating a lot of entry-level tech roles, which are often the on-ramp that women use to break into the industry. But it's also creating massive demand for mid-level and senior roles that combine technical depth with strategic judgment, ethical oversight, and governance skills. The McKinsey report actually calls this an opportunity if companies deliberately invest in reskilling mid-career women into AI-adjacent roles, the talent gap could be solved and gender representation could improve at the same time. But that's not happening on its own, and the rollback of DEI programs in the U.S. and increasingly in Europe is making it less likely without policy intervention. So what I want to say on this nice, lovely International Women's Day is that this data is big. Girls are outperforming in school. Women are getting PhDs. The problem is not the pipeline. The problem is the doors that close after the pipeline. We have culture bias in advancement. We have a lack of mentorship at senior levels. We have caregiving burdens with no support structure, which are really the leaks. And then, of course, we talked a little bit about AI, which was supposed to be this great equalizer, but it might actually widen that gap that we're kind of talking about here. But that's that.
Yeah, I definitely... I'm mad I can't find the other article I had because it was going to tie in to the stuff about Black people, women, leadership, and all the other stuff. And, you know, how I see a lot of times women leave leadership just because it's an ongoing fight, never-ending battle. I know.
You feel like it's because of mental burnout?
Yeah, because you have people that do not just want to serve on the Black women. I've seen it. I've literally seen it. I've seen it happen. And vice versa. For a Black man, you'll see it happen to where, like I said, it's not a lot. Like, think about it. Sarah Bond just stepped down from the president, or was she the president or CEO of Xbox Live? Yeah, I mean, she just stepped down. We're not gonna see like another Black woman take her spot. Granted, I want people also to know, like, hey, the Black people that always get put in leadership positions, I'm gonna say most of the time, because there could be somebody come nitpick me or whatever. They mostly are overqualified for what they're supposed to be doing. And they had to work extremely hard to get there. Now, I think also if I go back to the point about women disappearing, I know over the last 6 years, I met like a lot of different women that are making a lot of money and whether it's in cybersecurity, tech, or other avenues. And a lot of them really realized after the grind, like a lot of them say, I just want to be married, have kids, and have somebody to take care of me because of, I think innately, if everybody could just follow their passions, they probably wouldn't be doing what they want to do or doing what they currently do to make money. And I think that's one of those things as well, too. Whereas I said a show where it's like, you know, I think the girls are outperforming the boys, and which I think is true because I think women are a little bit more detail oriented than men, just by and large. Like, yeah, I fixate on everything.
Not too much. It's International Women's Day.
Yeah, I do. But that's what makes y'all good in cyber. That's why I always try to get women on our team, because they are detail oriented. Whereas, you know, the mill probably a little bit more big picture, more they may get tired of sitting down and learning. Like, it's just different learning styles, I would say, too, when it comes to that as well.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
If money wasn't an issue, what would you spend your time doing for a living?
I actually would spend my time doing this if money wasn't an issue.
Full time?
Yeah.
Period.
I think I would spend my time doing this on top of other stuff. Just because I think I would. I think, but I actually, in a perfect world, I would do this, but also I probably have my own company where I do.
The same stuff you're doing. Yeah.
Like, I love, like, the cool stuff. Like, sometimes I hate that I like watching TV because TV be making
you. I love TV so bad.
TV be making you want to go be either a lawyer or low-key. I low-key want to work for a law office.
You know, dope. It's and they actually have people that work there.
Yeah, they be paying.
Think about it from a forensic perspective. They might need somebody on board.
Yeah, they be paying. They got one. They got some roles in Dallas for that.
I'm not opposed to that either.
One of my old clients actually was like a sysadmin at a law firm, mm-hmm. and now he's a security engineer for another company. But no, because I'm very intrigued at the different cases that come in.
It's same.
Like, I would love to go work in what was the cause? What was Jessica's last name on Suits?
I don't know. I didn't watch it.
Really?
Nope.
Thank you. Well, anyways, Harvey Specter, Lit, and I forgot what her last name was.
You work with Jax?
I don't know.
You work with Jax.
Jax tried to come in there a little too cute. We need to be about business.
You can be cute and be about business.
That's not what I mean. And you know.
Okay.
Think about it. Lewis do work with the computers and stuff too.
He do.
But he a game developer.
But he was getting finessed by that dude.
Yeah, for real. But
he would have been out the door quick.
But I'm just saying, you know, like, it's some people that's coming to work and there's some people that's trying to be seen being cute at work. That's what I mean. Jax be trying to be seen. Especially let what's your boy name? The bald head. Let Morris Chestnut come in the room. You know she's trying to be seen. So, whereas now Lincoln Lawyer, he be getting this stuff too. But this last season was pretty interesting. But definitely that. And speaking of that, while we are at a little bit of a segue, like, are you caught up on Cross yet?
No.
What about Paradise?
I ain't even started. I know. I've just been, like, I haven't.
Give her some tomatoes, chat, if y'all still here with us. Give her some tomatoes.
I haven't been able to, like, even sit down and watch anything. But, yeah. It's on my, which one first, Paradise or Cross?
Two different shows. Like, Paradise is more in the veins of, like, the show I was talking about, Copenhagen and Night Agent. Whereas Cross is
more suspense.
Different, more suspense detective
yeah.
type. So they're two different. I can't really compare the two.
Did you like Lupin?
I watched it. It was cool.
The first one, the first season was
with the French dude.
Yeah.
I had to go back and really watch it. If I go back and watch it, I'll see if I really liked it or not.
He would be a great social engineer. Hmm. He like physical. He'd be great.
I think let me see. And then I just went back and watched Top Boy Summer House. So that's before the season that came back.
How's Game of Thrones?
I fell off. I've been watching it. So like,
you said you're on season two.
Yeah, I'm on season two. Really, I'm on three because I've been rewatching her because she's been watching it. Like, but I just fell off of watching it because I've been busy as well.
Yeah.
It's just one of the things where it's one of them shows you really got to be hyper fixated and watch.
And you have to like pay attention. Right. You look down. You done missed way too
so
much.
I can't really watch it the way I want to because I'm too busy in my life
and,
now.
And just like you said, the stuff I've been watching, I don't need to watch. Like mm-hmm. it can just be on and I can hear it and catch it. Yeah.
Yeah, but this show, I just doing too much when it comes
to
this.
Is she watching the new one? It's not the new
one. Not yet. She's just rewatching.
Like, it's GOT. Not a new one, but it's like a new spinoff.
No, she's just rewatching GOT. But speaking of something that you said in that article was about mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
I had an excellent video about mentorship.
Pop it on there.
Well, let's see. Here you go, right here. I think this is something that everyone needs to watch, whether you're Gen X, Gen Z, whatever, because there are people that are career changers late in life, and they need to watch this. Now, there are times when your manager can be your mentor, but most of the times they aren't.
Yeah. Manager is not your mentor. They're there to hit targets, not build your dream career. Of course, there's cases where managers can be your mentor, and I've, you know, been fortunate to be in those situations. There are certain situations where your manager can be your mentor, and I've been fortunate enough to witness that myself. But what you guys need to realize is stop expecting your manager to map out your future, because they're not there for that. Don't forget, they have a manager. If your growth does not improve their numbers, then you're just simply not a priority. And I think a lot of you guys need to realize that, especially if you're working in a corporate environment. The people who accelerate the most build sponsors, not just managers. They find people with influence. They try and sit in those rooms with people with influence, and that's how they build their career, not through trying to be a mentee to their manager. Because I can guarantee you one thing, a lot of these managers do not give a flying. Anyways, guys, follow me for more insight on just surviving life.
I think he ate down, especially with the a lot, especially if you're in tech, if you're in big tech. A lot of these companies have this high performance, you know, culture. And just like he said, if you're not moving the needle significantly, you can move the needle, right? And it can just be by the bare minimum. But if you're not moving it significantly, you're not at the top of their list. And also, your manager can, I kind of don't all the way agree with him. So your manager, I feel like a good manager should be able to help you if you don't know, but I do think you still should come forth with something. Like if you were my manager, right? And I'm like, okay, well, I'm considering doing this and this next. You maybe can introduce me to some people who do A or B, and I can decide based on those conversations and interactions if I'm into it. However, what I can do to come is come to you and say, I have no idea, and then expect you to help me figure something out. You have to come with something already prepackaged in order for them to make it better, you know?
Right.
If they're a good manager, because everybody doesn't have one.
For sure. Yeah. So what I would say is this, I've been doing this all day. Visibility. That's a big one. So visibility.
Giving reading rainbow.
Hey, they need it sometimes. You got to put it right in their face. I did a LinkedIn learning course about this. One of the first things I learned when I got to Goldman Sachs was that my manager put me to the side. I was like, yo, if you stay here, the way you do, similarly saying, get visibility, sponsors, all these people will decide when you get promoted and all this other stuff. That's one part of it, of how to promote your career. Second thing is you need to know what your end goal looks like. Like you said, you're going to have to present something to them, because most companies do not have a roadmap on, hey, if you start here, you can do this, you can do this, do this, do this. You're not really going to find a lot of places. You got to figure out what you want to do, or you'll be the trailblazer to build that out. Now, granted, at a lot of companies, you'll find out that sometimes roles don't even come open frequently on like the team you work on. And so you may have to go somewhere else in the org, which is not unheard of. Third, some companies do have the thing where you can find like a mentor, like has this thing where you can get paired up with a mentor. You can do that, or what I did sometimes is I just go find these people, search them on like wherever they work or who's like, let's say it's a job I want to do. Now I see who's reporting to, and I can find myself, this person be cool. So now you can go throughout the way and introduce yourself, a person that you'll never interact with, and now they know your name. You can start coming up in some places, but like, hey, that guy from such and such team, he may not be what we need right now, but I think they got a good foundational skill set to work with us, you know, in the future. That's kind of how you start getting on the radar. But you have to be the person to put yourself out there. That's the initiative. There we go. See, every time it ends, the initiative that you need when it comes to being in corporate America.
You definitely have to have the initiative. The most successful people, they just get it, and they got it, and it's understood. I kind of want to piggyback off what you said. Sometimes the people who are watching this video might feel like, but that's still not enough. Like, what do I say? Some things that you can say if you don't quite know what you want to do is maybe ask your manager, what do folks typically do after this role? Or what do folks typically do before this role? And then you can have some conversations with people who are in that role or were in that role and they've switched to a different job title or a different area within the business. But you got to come with something, for real. You got to come with something. And if you don't, you'll never talk about it. You'll never talk about your career growth and progression in that one-on-one. It'll just be those check-ins. This is what I've been doing. This is what I've been doing. This is what I've been doing. Instead of, this is what I've been doing, and this is what I'm trying to do.
Right. So the easiest way too sometimes is you find the smartest person on your team, go start their LinkedIn, see what how they got there, and open up to them. And if you start showing yourself worthy, you can build an unofficial mentee-mentor relationship that way. Then now it's another way where you start coming up and opening doors and getting tasked for doing certain projects because you've aligned yourself with the right people who are already making the impact. And that makes it an easier way for you to get a role where we always talk about how you're interviewing for roles and they already knew who they want internally, just had to post a job. That's how you put yourself in a position to get those type of roles.
Yep.
So that's how you do that. Let's see. What else did we have? Oh, we got the special one for you. Being a rich woman. Hang on. Here's how this is. So guys, to preface this, this is a video for the women who get called big money.
Things I want to tell young women is that this, I'm just a girl. Oh, I didn't know the innocence thing. That's fine and cute and dandy. But once you make over a certain amount of money, that's not going to fly. People don't care. Oh, I'm the personality hire. That's not working. Okay. Over a certain amount of money, people are not playing those reindeer games with you. The expectations are much higher. The stakes are much higher. And that is because that company is paying you well over $10,000, $20,000 a month before taxes. That has to clear their account. The jokes are no longer funny. the being cute, it's no longer a thing. Those men are gonna go. They're gonna treat you like a man in that room. I promise you.
I got a pause right there. What do you agree with her take right there, saying they're gonna treat you like a man in the room?
Only the a holes.
But what does that even mean, though? Treat you like a man? Yeah, like what same. Does that? What does that what mean?
I don't like the way it sounds, so I don't agree.
Yeah, because I mean, like,
are they going to yell at you? I've never been treated like a man.
Now, if you say they're going to want deliverables or something out of you, yeah, but I don't think that's being treated like a man. I think they're just going to treat you like a functioning employee that's supposed to do their job.
Yeah.
That's what I think right there. So I.
Sometimes when we're talking, we go a little bit further.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you got to get extreme, but let's see.
I promise you, it's going to be, they're going to do everything but curse you out. Because, you know, you're a woman. So they're not going to curse at you. They're going to curse at the mother boy. But they're not going to curse at you. But they're going to, trust me, you're a man in that room. So you want a soft life because you want to make a lot of money. Those two things do not go together. Your job is going to be hard. And you're going to have to develop thick skin. And the girl, that check. You know what I'm saying? The check is well worth it, if you ask me. But just know. That being a girl, being cute, oh, I didn't know, I didn't realize. None of that. None of it flies over a certain amount of money. Over 120, 125, none of that's flying. None of it's flying. None of it's flying. Why wasn't it done? Oh. We playing. Like, we playing. Like, we playing in here. Yeah, it gets like that.
But I don't think that's being treated like a man.
I was going to say the same thing. I think that what she's trying to say is that they're going to have the expectation that you're going to hit the ground running and that you're just like whatever you said, the verbiage you used, you being a functioning employee. That is the expectation. The whole I didn't know I'm just a girl thing is not going to you're not going to last long there. And you're going to be that's going to be more telling of your lack of capabilities, your lack of critical thinking. You can still be a girl. You can still be confused. But how are you going to work through and or process that confusion in order to be successful at whatever job it is you're trying to do?
I'd also say she's combating all of the pandemic TikTok content. Mm-hmm. Soft life girly. I'm getting my maca. I'm going to walk right here. I'm going shopping on my lunch break. This is what I did today. Here's the outfit of the day.
But I don't like that. Women can't be seen in the light to do both.
Well,
I'm not saying you're saying that, no. I'm just saying.
But we know for a fact a lot of them weren't doing no work.
We do. We talked about it. And a lot of them ain't posting that content no more either.
That's the whole point. So yeah. She's combating them. That I think that's the whole big thing. Like, she's combating.
I wish that. We could have seen what caused her to make the video. Like, if she was reacting to something that she saw or something.
I honestly just think it's the same thing we've been reporting the last couple of weeks about people not realizing, hey, you getting paid over $100,000. You day one, you got to hit the ground running.
What's not clicking? What do you think you're doing?
But you got to think about it. In the pandemic, people was getting paid six figures to do nothing.
They were.
We've covered it for years.
And then that was what they were going around telling people. I don't do nothing all day.
Exactly. And these are the people that, I don't say, it's not everybody that got laid off.
No, for
but
sure.
A lot of the people were the people that didn't become valuable and got laid off. Some people that actually work hard got caught up in everything and got laid off because that's kind of just how it goes. But a lot of them got laid off. And now they're having hard times bouncing back because
you didn't do anything for so long. And now you have to go somewhere else and pivot and or learn new technology and systems and tools.
Yeah, it goes back to the episode I did with Tayo. And he was talking about how for 6 months on that cloud migration project, they were doing nothing. And he said, so he used that time to make himself valuable and learn how to be valuable. Because most people, if you say, I'm going to pay you $150,000 and you really ain't doing it the whole day, a lot of people are not going to do nothing. But those people will either be stuck at $150,000, or if they lose that job, they won't even be able to make it again.
Exactly.
Then there are going to be the people that say, if I'm getting paid $150,000 to do nothing, imagine what I get paid to do something. And them people going to go through and make $200, $225, $250, $300.
Them the real hustlers right there. Them the real hustlers. And the people who want to break in or get into tech real easy, like because they think it's going to be easy, these are the same people who are not taking advantage of those opportunities and those moments where they can improve and expand their skill set. They're just being content with whatever it is that they have going on. I think it's important for you to take advantage of all time you have available and all resources that a company provides you with, because you might go somewhere that doesn't have any of that. So soak up as much as you can and take it where you go.
Yeah, facts. So, I mean, hopefully y'all heard that part. Like, hey, there's one point to make, you know, 150. Take that knowledge and double that, triple it, whatever you want to do. But there are ways that you can make more. So if you ever get like that, and that's the thing too. Like, the more money you make, the more you realize, hey, it's more money to make. I know that's capitalistic, but
no, that's facts.
That's literally,
that's absolutely
that's
facts.
That's how it is. And let's see. I think this is one because I want to show some people how to navigate HR when you're on LinkedIn, if you're looking for a job at your current company. And then we got one about the fiance costing a job. So let's see this.
HR department screenshot one of my clients' activity on LinkedIn. Out of over 200 people at this point, this is something that's never happened. And it's actually something that I tell people, don't stress. It's not that deep. They're not looking at you. But today it happened. And that is a sign more than ever that you need to go, because if your HR department is screenshotting a comment that you left on your LinkedIn, so basically with LinkedIn, you can see your activity. And part of my process and system is we're networking, we're commenting on other people's posts and stuff. And I tell people, you know, you don't have to say, I'm looking for a job, I just applied, whatever. But my client did that because they don't really care too much. But what happened was the HR department screenshot the comment of my client saying, hey, so-and-so just applied for the role, would love to connect and talk about it, right? They screenshot that and sent it to the boss or something. Or the CEO, I forgot if it was CEO, talked to HR, I forgot which way it went. But they called me today and they're like, Patrick, has this ever happened? I said, girl, you gotta go. That, do you understand how insane that is to do that? Do you know how insane that is to do that? So I want to let y'all know, listen, you do have to use LinkedIn to find a job. And I guess they are watching y'all like hawks. But at the same time, if you have a job that's sitting there and watching your activity on LinkedIn, you have to block these people. They are miserable. They are miserable. I'm so flabbergasted. I don't even have to. So you just have to block. Honestly, I'm not even trying to be funny.
He's so blue. He's so blue. He's so irritated. Rightfully so.
He sounds like he sit around and say child all day.
I think that you definitely got to be careful out here. Definitely got to be careful, especially if you know that you work for an employer that's petty and is real HR-y, and you know that has that culture. Everybody's been at some place like that before in their careers. You know if you're there.
Yeah, but you really, if you're looking for a job, you have to assume that everybody from work can look at your thing, and they may have certain triggers for maybe employees when they go through their whatever they're doing on LinkedIn to see you. So your best bet is to never comment that. It's to always send a direct message. That's also why I don't advocate for people, if you're currently working somewhere and you're trying to look for a job, to take the banner off and only have it, you know, to recruiters. Now, granted, if HR is a real shady, they will just be trying to see, oh, I see, yes, you got your stuff open to work, because, you know, they got HR recruiter where they can see that stuff. But you want to be discreet. And that's also why I don't advocate for you to have your active company showcased on your LinkedIn, just because that's also weird. If you start getting too popular, you say things online that people don't like, they try to make it as if that represents the company and it's really your own thoughts. And so it's one of those things. And I'm going to tell you something here too, while we're here. If you somehow use your current company to leverage your career and professional brand, be prepared to feel that twofold when the pendulum shifts and they don't like it. And now they start scrutinizing everything you do because you are leveraging, hey, I work at so-and-so. I'm a so-and-so recruiter, or I'm a so-and-so cloud engineer. I'm a so-and-so incident responder. If you start doing that right there too, that's going to draw a lot of attention on you, because you keep on mentioning the company name. And it seems like, hey, these are the type of people you hire. Why are they talking like this here and there? Why are they saying this, or why are they doing this and all this other stuff? And a lot of times you could not be doing anything wrong, but it's the fact that you put a target on your back by making you and your employer like this. So you got to make sure they are cool with all that before you start doing that. So that's what I was just saying. But in the meantime, do not apply anywhere and say, hey, I just applied. That's the recipe for disaster. And here you go. I thought this was pretty cool. So this is the last one.
Beyonce cost me a $300,000 opportunity.
Jesus. I'm already pissed for him.
Like, I
here we go. For the last 6 months, I've been looking to jump to a new job. I got my master's in cybersecurity from an Ivy League school, and I've had multiple job offers that my current employer cannot compete with. My biggest disappointment, however, was being ghosted from what was essentially my dream job, a security auditor job for one of the biggest manufacturers in the business. It would have required me to travel a lot for work, but other than travel, I would work maybe 20 hours a week remotely, and the paycheck was $300,000 more a year than what I'm currently making now. So not $300,000 total, $300,000 more.
Life change.
Just gotta stop. Wait, what manufacturer you think they was interviewing at? What's the largest manufacturer in the world?
Let me look it up. Than what he's making now.
Wow.
I went through two rounds of interviews, and I clicked with the managers. Then they ghosted me. I was devastated, but moved on. I'm looking to start my next job in next month with another great employer. My fiance hated the idea of getting the original job. I would be gone for weeks, sometimes a month at a time, multiple times a year. I wanted to start a family, and so did she, and she told me she did not want to raise our future children alone, even if that meant she could quit her job and be a stay-at-home mom. She refused to talk about it as well, shaming me for even considering the job when it would put us in a financial situation I could have only dreamed of as a kid. Maybe if we talked about it, we could have found some middle ground, but honestly, maybe this would have been the irreconcilable differences that ended our relationship.
I'm just right here now. Hit that, Randy Jackson. It's a no for me, dog.
Bye.
It's a no for me. I feel like this may be, I don't know what the fiance does, but I feel like maybe they don't want you to outshine them or something, but something is going on here. Like, there's no way possible. Like, if a person really wants you to succeed, they'll deal with it, because they know eventually everything's a means to an end.
I just was about to say that I don't believe in making crazy sacrifices like that. I think that, just like you said, if you love truly someone, you want them to do the things that make them happy. And sometimes that might not align with your preferences and wants, but out of the love and compassion that you have, you still support that, right? Because it makes them happy.
Or this person needs more to do. Like, if you're like, if me being gone that much is bothering you, granted, we don't have kids or nothing now. Like, I don't understand. I went to these Ivy League schools, and I know I gotta,
but That's why it's important to choose your partner. Because you was with me when I went to this school. You know what I mean? We talked about it. You knew what the plan exactly. was.
So that's why I really don't understand their mindset of doing all this to them.
This week, I got a call that has resulted in me almost unaliving my fiance.
Unaliving. You know what that means?
One of the managers at the dream job called me up and said that they were heartbroken when I backed out of the process, but that they had another opening that would not require as much travel. I was so confused and learned that not only was I selected for the third round of interviews, two of the three senior managers at the company wanted to offer me the job by the third round. Unfortunately, I sent them an email after the second round saying that after discussing it with my fiance, that the traveling was a deal breaker and that I needed to back out.
I got to pause it right there because...
Listen to me.
No. You go first.
I'm going to eat it up. Because why is your fiance on your, sounds like your personal laptop, responding to bit? So this already is leaving room for there to be an issue at work where you on my laptop doing things. Why are you even, how can you even get asked?
No. Let's take it first. You went to an Ivy League and got a degree in cybersecurity.
So thank you.
You don't know how to protect your stuff?
What? How didn't you know? I mean, it's in the sent folder, not really looking in the sent folder.
Hey, I would have been seeing it on my phone, like
the notification, the initial email. That's a lot of manipulation going on in this scenario.
I immediately knew that my fiance went behind my back and sent that email. That job was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Its salary was twice what I would be making at my new job that I'm starting in a month. It was with the biggest manufacturer in the sector, and it could have been a fast track position to management. I had to excuse myself through tears from the call and had to hang up on the manager in the middle of the conversation. I didn't know how to write this without blood on my hands. My fiance went behind my back and ruined possibly the best opportunity of my career without any possibility of coming to sort of consensus between us. I'm livid beyond any sense of the word. When she came home that day, I saw red. When she walked in the door, I didn't know if I was going to flip my shit. I don't know how I had so much restraint that I had allowed her to leave the house unscathed after what she did to me. I told her that I knew what she did. She tried to apologize, but I refused to hear any of it. I told her she needed to get out of the house for her own safety. She called and texted me multiple times. I've ignored her, deleted every voicemail and text without even considering hearing her out. I finally answered this morning and didn't get a minute into the conversation before I burst into tears and hung up. I knew if I was to see her face to face again, would not be able to hold back next time. The last few days have put me in the darkest place of my life. I just got done texting her that it is over and we're through. That when she plans to come get her stuff, I need to be out of the house for obvious reasons. I'm considering talking to a lawyer to see if there's a chance to hold her accountable.
I'm mad at him for breaking up with her.
What's that little show?
And luckily, they were not married. And luckily, he was able to get, I'm assuming it's a he. He or she, they were able to get out the situation before that became an issue in the marriage. That is so unforgivable.
You remind me of...
Imagine working... Do you know how hard it is to get a job today?
Paying twice, you already making $300,000 more?
Do you know how hard it is to get a job today?
Well, what song that is? Cameras and Drake say, give me my ring back. Can't keep that shit. Give me the ring back.
Give me my necklace back.
Like, no. I mean... He's like, I ain't gonna lie. It's probably some people in his family that are like, hey, fam, just slide me some and I got you just because ain't no way.
You can feel how you want to feel. Not saying you, her, can feel how you want to feel. You didn't even try to have a conversation with it. Like, you went full on.
She overstepped.
That's beyond overstepping. And then this was something that was going to change your life, not just his life, your life.
Yeah. She created that boy didn't turn into Future.
That's
he gonna have a lot of trust issues.
I would, God bless him. I hope he's able to stay connected with those.
And part of me want to say, you know what, this fake, because I don't really believe. I don't know any woman out here that's gonna trip. Okay, cool. I ain't really got to work if I don't want to. I can have a soft life. He doing this and that. I don't know anybody like that.
Life be so ridiculous. I believe it.
I do too, but I'm just saying, I really, they're just, if she was the, this sound like people, I don't know.
I'm angry.
I'm mad for him.
I'm angry like it's
because I visualized like when he said like he was like,
imagine, let's break this down. Imagine if this was a first generation student, right? First gen, first in the family to be making over, it's probably six figures plus, not just 100,000, not 200,000, not 300,000. It was about 4, 5, 6 somewhere. It was 300,000 more than what they were already making. Come on, man. What?
And the whole killing part about it is the fact that they was going to offer him.
It was his.
They was going to offer him.
The fact that they came back, I really, 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 really hope he's able to maintain that relationship. And also, how do you explain that? How do you explain that?
It's hard to explain it because I can feel you. But I'm like, hold on now. You're supposed to be in cybersecurity. This happened.
Thank you.
So how can I also trust you? Because my only thing is like, this one I'd be wanting to get. This is like, see, we should start a whole niche where like we should start a firm where we do PI stuff for stuff like this. Because how did they use it in his phone? Was it an older phone? Because you know, the new like iPhones, they test to see if you're actually up and not sleep. Because you know, old phones, you can face unlock somebody like this and unlock. Now they want to make sure that you're up. So they have this patented technology that can check for you being up. Is that happening? Is it one of those? This is why I believe like there should be some segmentation. Like it's not a fact that I'm being like sneaky or anything, but no, you can't have a password for everything. Some stuff should just be your stuff and my stuff unless it's an emergency.
Yeah.
Or here. Let me unlock it.
It's just such an unfortunate situation. Like that is... That's so unfortunate.
Right.
And then now you finna play victim and now you finna go tell everybody that he was finna choose the job over you. Like, come on.
And they mama probably said, I would have chose over you too. if you ever had your ex email a job on your behalf, leave us a comment below because we will read it and discuss it. If you had some weird stuff like that happen to you and you're still here rocking with us, let us know.
I'll be mad for you.
Facts. But we are at the end of today's episode. I hope everybody has enjoyed it. Y'all been rocking with us. We had to get it in for y'all. Logistically, you know, things happen, but we got y'all. If y'all enjoyed it, subscribe to the Patreon. Share it out. Leave us voicemails. I think I posted last time. Go back and leave the voicemails. I don't know when it's going to happen, but at least by the end of 2026, something live is going to happen from Dallas. I don't know when, but something's going to happen.
Pull up on us.
We might have Cardi in the building. man. But I appreciate y'all, man. And in the words of Cardi B to Stephon Diggs, good luck.